Welcome to the Cultivate Church Planting Podcast, where we talk about all things church planting. I'm your host, Brian Kelly, and today we're honored to have Nick Cady co-hosting the episode. We also have a special guest, Justin Thornton, who's the Director of Multiplication and Church Planting at the Christian and Missionary Alliance. Justin is an author, strategist, and church planter with years of experience and excellent advice for church planters and sending churches. It's a great episode, so let's dive right in. All right, welcome to the Cultivate Church Planting Podcast, and I'm here with Nick Cady, my colleague in crime at the Cultivate Church Planting program at Calvary Global Network. And we have on the show Justin Thornton, and Nick was like, hey, if you can get this guy on the show, let's do it, because he's a church planting expert. I think that's those are the words you said, isn't it?
That's what I said, yep.
Professional or expert? I can't remember which
both.
One it was.
He's both.
Or neither. And,
we'll find out how good he is. But Justin is the Director of Multiplication. Is that still your title, Justin?
Yeah.
Of the
yeah.
Alliance group, the Christian and Missionary Alliance. And fun fact, I didn't say this beforehand, Justin, but my father-in-law was a pastor for about 8 years in the CNMA. So up in Boston, Massachusetts.
Awesome. Yeah.
So I'm familiar with the ministry and A.B. Simpson and all that. So great history of not only church planting, but mission work. And so he's here today to talk about his heart, his vision for church planting, what they're doing as a network, and how we can learn from that, and just to have a good time and share his professionalism.
Yeah.
So welcome on the show, Justin.
Yeah, thanks. It's really good to be with you guys. We got to know you through the Expositors Collective and some other things you guys do. So it's my joy to join you. I will make a small correction due to the fact that I have a boss who is the National Church Planting Director. And so I don't want to take his title in that intro and then
yes.
And find this podcast and go, oh, I didn't know you were leading the whole thing, but I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, you're fired.
Yeah.
I'm glad we cleared that up, but maybe one day, right?
Yeah, maybe one day. We'll see. Not if he hears this podcast.
No. Yeah, right. Yeah, we'll keep it from him. But yeah. You guys are doing some great stuff, and I was actually just browsing on the website, and very, very clean website, very easy to understand of what you're doing. But in a nutshell, why don't you just kind of introduce the listeners to what the Alliance is doing as far as church planting and kind of what your role in that is.
Yeah, well, I think we're just like every other movement in that we are passionate about reaching new people groups and going where the gospel isn't. That's how our denomination started, was reaching people immigrants coming off the boats in New York City. And A.B. Simpson, who you mentioned, it's not that he got fired. It's that he said to his elders, I'd like to bring immigrants into this church. And they were like, those folks are icky. We don't really want anything to do with them. So he said, we'll start a church. And that's what he did. It's John's Pizzeria. If you want to go visit it today in New York City, you can have some pizza and look around and see the stained glass. And that's where a movement of missionaries started. It really started as a missionary movement. It's called a Maverick Missionary Movement, where we were sending missionaries all over the world to the darkest places. And then they eventually had to formalize into a denomination. And so we're just like you guys, we're passionate about starting new churches. We're passionate about the future and seeing what God wants to do.
Awesome. Nick, welcome to the show. Thanks
hey.
For co-hosting. Always good to have you on.
Hey, good being with you, Brian. Always enjoy our times together. So
yeah.
Justin, I wanted to ask you just what's your history with church planting? Maybe tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was a youth pastor, like a lot of us started out. We were just kind of in North Jersey in a non-denominational church. I think I'm an adventurous soul, and that youth pastor job that had good money and good benefits, I just felt like that was too safe. once I left it, I was full of deep regret.
Were you married at the time?
I wasn't yet. So it was okay.
All right.
The
regret wasn't that big. So it's not too bad.
Yeah. I was going to go work at Papa John's and help plant a church. That was my dream. And so I did that. And, that church plant fell apart through the leadership very quickly. There was a moral failure, not a good story to start with, but there was a moral failure. And so I was left as a 23-year-old to be the pastor of these eight people in a living room. So I had no clue what I was doing. My mentor said, don't be a wuss and come home. They're asking you to lead them. He actually used different words, but not for a podcast. And so I took that spiritual note and I did get married months later. And we just, again, like most of us, started in the living room reading through the book of Acts over and over again and trying to do what the Bible said and trying to live it out. And so that was kind of the first church plant. And I was there for 9 years. I was in love with it. It was West Michigan. And I don't know, just the idea that you can create culture. The fact that you don't got, you have to talk anybody into doing A, B, or C. There's nobody whining if you try something new. If you try something new and it sucks, that's what it is. It sucks. And you try not to do it the next time. But nobody's going to take their tithe check away anymore because you don't have any tithes. I mean, there's no tithes. You're just trying to change the world. I mean, there's just something beautiful about that core group of people and the first 25 and the first 50 and the first whatever. So I fell in love with church planting, was there for 9 years and felt called to a less churched environment in Jersey City, New Jersey. I believe that Calvary Chapel has some charismatic roots. And so through some charismatic things, through dreams and visions and prophetic words, things that didn't always happen in me and my wife, God called us to Jersey City, New Jersey. So we handed off to our associate pastor that church plant, and we started another church in Jersey City. It was kind of a replant of 20 people. And so that's been kind of the journey. I handed that off to another associate pastor some years ago to do this regional job where I help find, assess, coach, train church planters. So that's been my history.
That's great. And now where are you located at the moment?
Yeah, I'm in Toledo, Ohio, and our territories, Michigan and Northwest Ohio.
Yeah. I love what you said about creating culture. That was exactly how I felt about the church plant, the first church that I planted. It was like, wow, this is so beautiful. You know, like it was really funny because a lot of the people who were coming into our church, a lot of them were brand new believers. So their first experience of Christianity, to them, what was normal about Christianity was what they experienced in our church. And I remember a funny thing, you know, it was in Hungary, so there weren't a lot of churches to begin with. But there was another church in town that we were like friends with them, you know, because they're the only other Christians that we knew in town. And so we would do things. I remember there were times like there was this wedding that we went to, and people from our church, they like went to the wedding, and then they found out the people from that other church, they don't dance. And people from our church were like, hey, these guys say that Christians don't dance. Is that true? And I'm like, no, we do. We dance all the time. It's all over the place in the Bible and stuff. And they were like, wow. But I just thought, to me, that was so cool to have these people who, you know, I got to essentially kind of shape them in what I, of course, deemed was a right and biblical way. And they didn't come in with baggage from bad Christian experiences. That was one of my favorite parts about planting a church.
Yeah, if like religion is the elephant in the room, it enters the room fast. It doesn't take 7-10 years for it to enter the room and ruin things. You know, the flow of religion, the rules of religion, the rules that we create inside of religion, and all of a sudden we're no longer loving people far from God. All of a sudden we have rules that are keeping us from leaving our building. And doing things that are attractive in love to those who don't know Jesus. And so church planting, you can shed all that weight immediately, and then you can do what you can to prevent religion from being the elephant in the room eventually.
That's good stuff. You mentioned that you were kind of replanting that second one. And I've had a couple of people on the show that I've asked this question to, but I mean, in your experience, what did you prefer? Did you prefer starting from scratch and getting going just like with a fresh slate? Or did you prefer coming into something that was already there that might have had a little bit more? I don't know what the situation was necessarily, but a lot of times those replants can come with, you know, money already and a few people already and kind of some like you've hit the ground running kind of thing. What do you prefer?
Yeah, it was definitely contextual, and it was a bit like a unicorn of a replant, because there was probably 18 to 20 people left over, but they were amazing. So it's not like the previous thing died because of something that they did. These were young, vibrant entrepreneurs. They had big jobs in New York City. They were go-getters. They were tithers. And so most replants don't have that as a remnant. So I don't know that we can, you know, kind of correlate the two. I would say if it were what normal replants look like, which are there's some baggage left over and there needs to be a full death. Okay. When we replant churches, there needs to be a clear and evident death. It needs to go in the ground for 6 months. The testimony in the community needs to totally change. The people need to know that what's coming in needs to totally change. And so that's kind of how we replant. And if that's the case, then I'd rather just start from scratch personally.
Hmm. Yeah, it was interesting. When I moved here to pastor the church I'm currently pastoring, so it had been a church plant. It was about 6 years in. There were about 60 to 70 people attending. And I did have some people who really advised me, like, you should just replant it, change the name, new location, new leaders, everything. And I've seen people go that direction. And in our case, we didn't. We just decided to actually work with and affirm the things that had been done. I mean, how do you know? Is there any advice on that? Like, let's say you come into something that's got a seed or a remnant. How do you know if it's time for a replant or if it's time for just a revitalization or something like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one step is, like, who are you as a leader? Are you a patient leader? Are you good at working with people, loving people, hearing them, listening to them, potentially incorporating their ideas, even if their ideas have been around for years? Is that who you are? Or are you a little mavericky? You're impatient and you rather just be someone who starts from scratch. Like, I think that's a big deal, because you have to be yourself. You have to be the most sanctified version of yourself. And I don't know that you can kick all of yourself out when you go to plant a church or replant a church. So
that's good.
I think you can try, but if you're going to be unhappy in week, you know, in month three, and you're going to start to get bitter and bite at people, then you're probably not being faithful to how God created you. And then another thing is, yeah, who have they created to be? Are they desperate enough to go on a new adventure? Mm. Or are they still holding on to the institution that was? If they're holding on to the institution that was, and every time you try to do something brand new, you're hitting your head into a wall, then it's probably time for a full death and replant. So I think those are kind of the two main factors. And then also, what is your testimony in the community? If the community sees you as a church that's unloving, that like there's a reason that people drive past it every week, then you probably need to replant, because it doesn't matter if you can't put under new management on the sign, and everybody's going to go, oh, okay, now that's the church I want to be a part of. They're gonna see you as that, what that church has always been to them, and that's probably problematic.
Yeah, he does have a lot of wisdom, Nick. You're right. I'm trying to think of the best. I'm trying to get the information out. Think of the best next question. But why don't you talk a little bit, Justin, about what you're doing now for the Alliance and how you're helping people plant churches? Like, what's the process and what's your role?
Yeah, honestly, it's kind of ever changing. I don't know about you guys, but I'm seeing first of all that new planters, first of all, they're few and far between. They're just not growing on trees. At least the planter that we used to look for. And I think,
do you think that's okay. Changed over the last little bit? Like, it used to be kind of a big thing, like a popular thing within, you know, especially young people, plant churches, you know, and do you think it's kind of gone down from there, or what's the story there?
Yeah, I actually just saw some guy throw a lot of statistics our way based on the downtick that we're on. And for 20 years, it was the hottest thing to do.
Yeah.
And now because we're kind of moving into a kind of a post-Christian realm, in the United States, and everybody's kind of rediscovering, what do I even believe? Even our young leaders are discovering, like, what do I even want to be a part of? What do I even want to believe? What do I even want to do? Most of the leaders that I run into who are potential church planters, they have a lot of angst, but not a lot of vision. So they have a lot of angst towards what they don't want to be and what they don't want to do. But you start to dive into, like, okay, well, what kind of church do you want to plant? What kind of community do you want to see? What do you want to catalyze? And they don't really have answers for that. They just know they don't want to be that. So we're in a really difficult season, I think. And I think like what we're trying to do as a denomination, like I'll be with seven of our regional guys soon. What we're trying to do is forecast, what is the church going to look like and how is it going to reach people? Because we think it's going to look totally different and we don't want to be 15 years behind. So we're trying to forecast what that looks like.
Have you had any projections? Like, what are some of the details about that? We're interested.
No. Yeah,
what's the church going to look like?
Yeah,
and that way we don't have to do our own research. You can just tell us.
Yeah,
they're not going to be highly whimmy. They're going to be whims, okay? But from what I see, and maybe that's just not a good answer and a good way to start an answer, but I think, first of all, leadership is going to be more polycentric. So leadership is going to be more, less of one guy on a stage who's a superstar, which, by the way, thank God it's going to be less of that, right? You go back to Exodus 18 and 19, and we need to have a Jethro moment of, like, why are you doing what you're doing? You know, this is why you're burnt out.
You're doing too much.
You're doing too much, homie. So we need a Jethro moment, and it's happening because our leaders are falling off of high platforms. So it's not that we prophetically called it out and started walking in that direction. It's that it's happening by necessity, but people want to be a part of a polycentric leadership where, you know, kind of that Ephesians 4 apest, apostle, prophet, evangelist, shepherd, teacher. They want to be a part of a team where everybody's functioning outside of that center, out of a poly center, rather than a mono center where someone is burnt out and doing everything themselves and everybody worships them instead of Jesus. So I think we're trying to figure out how do we build these teams. And then I also think we're going to move into a more co-vocational model where people are doing other things. Because it's polycentric, maybe they're only giving 10 to 15 hours a week and they're giving the other 35 to their or 25 to their missional job, their job that's loving people in the community, that's loving their neighbors. And they're just contributing, you know, this part of them to the church, to the body. And by the way, like Hispanic planners have been doing this forever.
Say that to your point. So those two things that you mentioned, what'd you call it? Polycentric leadership and co-vocational. Sometimes people call it bivocational, but I understand why you call it co-vocational. I like that terminology. And I would say that by doing so, not only will the church in the United States look more like the church in other parts of the world, but will also look more like the church throughout all of history. Because throughout all of history, with the exception of, for example, the large institutional Roman Catholic Church, with that exception, if you look at Protestant movements, if you look at other, you know, movements, reform movements that came up throughout history, even within the Roman Catholic times, they looked a lot like polycentric or polycentric leadership and co-vocational people. I mean, that's really been the history of Protestantism for the last 500 years in most of the world. And as the church is growing, right, if you talk about where Christianity is growing exponentially right now in Latin America, in Africa, in parts of Asia, that's how it functions.
Yeah, it functions in smaller bits. It functions less on institution, less on individual. I mean, and that's the movement that God created. He told us to make disciples who make disciples. He didn't tell us bring everybody to one building so one guy could make disciples. So once we start to realize, okay, we're not even really in a biblical model, and we start to move to some of these other more biblical models, I think that the church will thrive again.
Yeah. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I was going to say, and because I was thinking through that, and you know, our movement has been predominantly a single senior pastor, you know, very top heavy leadership style, and it's worked well in a lot of cases, and you know, we've done well with it. And so I was kind of thinking of how is those young guys who are up and coming, who have been familiar with this, who have ambition, godly ambition, to go out and pioneer and plant a church. I was thinking, is that going to work within that polycentric model? And I kind of answered my own question because, or you did rather, because you talked about that, you know, apostle, prophet, evangelist, shepherd, teacher. There's still room for that apostolic gifting within a poly, right, a group setting. So it's not like you have to abandon a person who has that drive and that vision or leadership skills for that matter, within that grouping. So I like it. I like it. And I think it's attractive too, to the world. I mean, people who are interested in, or who will be interested in becoming part of a church, they're tired of the superstars. And they're ready for, you know, that authenticity that comes with the community that you're talking.
Yeah, that's the fun. It's funny thing is, it's only not interesting to the narcissist, right?
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Like as a recovering narcissist,
it's not all about
nobody.
Me.
That's. I also think if I could, because it's one of my favorite topics, is like if those leaders. First of all, their job is to equip the saints. That's their main job, is to make disciples and equip the saints. So if they can realize, I think I saw Larry Walkemeyer said this, he's the Free Methodist guy in the national church planting position. He said, your best fruit grows on other people's trees.
Hmm.
Like if they can realize that their best fruit is not going to come from their pulpit ministry or whatever is hovering around them, but how much they can pour into other people, then they'll see the beauty of the church. And also if these young folks can see, like if they can do a study of the priesthood of all believers, that the beauty exists in the ordinary people in their pews. The army exists, the Christianity growing like a disease exists in the priesthood of all believers, not in the professional priest. And if they can figure out how to draw that beauty out, Then they're going to go, okay, holy smokes, we're an army. This is something bigger. It's grander. It's bigger than me having some good job. It's bigger than people loving me and noticing me at the grocery store. It's so much bigger than that. Once they see that, then we'll have more leaders. And not only that, but now we have an ocean of leaders because the priesthood of all believers, people are rising up. Cream is coming to the top. And they're, that person's a leader. They didn't even know they were a leader. But they're just... they're realizing they're called to ministry too. And so I just think that's going to be the thriving nature of the church in the future. But I do think it's going to take, I don't know, 10, 15 years to get there. Like I have a mentor who says, we're going to be hospice. Like we're not actually going to get to see it because we're going to be laying to rest some of these other non-biblical models of church. And we're going to be empowering the next generation, but we might die before we get to go in the promised land.
Moses, yeah. Moses model dies.
I think when I hear about, you know, kind of polycentric leadership, we do it here at our church. And I know a lot of other churches in our movement do it as well. And even, you know, in the really, maybe somebody would accuse it of being a Moses model church. But if you think about the churches that have seen a lot of growth and impact and success, oftentimes there may be one guy in front, but there's a whole team of people who are doing significant ministry, and without them, this wouldn't be possible. But I would just say, like, I think that one of the misnomers I've heard about it is that it really only works in smaller churches, but it can't work on a large scale. But actually, I know of many churches that do have a polycentric leadership. And of course, there's different ways, right? There might be a polycentric leadership with still one guy who's the more prominent teacher, for example. But I've seen it work in large churches as well. And so I think it is a good way forward. It definitely leads, I think, to a stronger congregation because, you know, if in it, like, unfortunately, we've seen some of these real top-heavy leadership models where there's a celebrity pastor, he falls, and then the church dissolves. You build a much stronger church by having a plurality of leaders.
Yeah, and that's a good point you make. Like, this is because you could go the other direction all the way to this kind of organic. Like, we have a group of people, and we targeted a city that we really wanted to be in. There was five pastors in the room. They wanted to plant a church in this city. And it was kind of the feeling like, well, we don't need to plant something that looks like a church. And what if there was a real organic vibe about it? It was real hippie-ish. and we don't really need a leader. Let's get a bunch of leaders. Well, you still need someone to galvanize, you know, cast vision, that apostolic function. You still need someone, you know, because we easily go this other direction where we're not wearing shoes and no one's leading, and that we're not going to go anywhere.
Everybody stinks.
That way either. Yeah, everybody stinks. We don't need deodorant. Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you got to have that balance. Great observation.
Hey, Justin, I want to ask you this. You know, so Brian and I, we work on the Cultivate Church Planting team. This is a Cultivate podcast. And what we do is we're trying to equip, train, deploy, and then care for church planters. And I know that you're doing that with your group of churches. So what are some of the ways that you do it? And we're going to take some notes and see if we can
Good question.
Figure out how to do it.
I'm sure we have very similar paradigms. So ours is called ACTS, Assess, Coach, Train, Support. So ours
that's
is
good,
a
Brian. Write
that's
good.
Down. Yeah, I know. Write that down there. Hang on a second. Let me take a note here. ACTS.
Yeah, it's an acronym.
We'll just change one of the words like a little bit, and then it'll be ours.
Yeah.
We're doing the same exact thing, but just because it's an acronym.
It sounds cool.
So for us, assessment, we do have a major assessment that's, you know, a 3.5-day event. You know, there's 10 assessors, there's a psychologist. It's a really intense environment and event. I know other groups that do it, Stadia, Acts 29. Lots of people do these final assessments. However, we're struggling with this because those typically assess for, again, that certain type of individual. And it's rare that we're able to create paradigms where anybody else gets through. So if you're looking, the apostle prophet gets through pretty easily. The evangelist gets through pretty easily. That go-getter, that red individual gets through pretty easily. But it's hard for other people to envision what the church is going to look like. Therefore, the leader, it's hard for the leader to get what it looks like. So for us, assessment has personally changed. Like in our region, assessment has changed. Whereas that was kind of the iceberg. Like, let's just get them to this thing and we'll find out, because we have an amazing assessment. It's intense and we feel like we're on the front lines. That used to be the iceberg. For me, the iceberg is now, where are you functionally planting a church? Like, who is following you? Where are you making disciples? I don't care if it's 12 people or 50. I don't care if it's you have dinner every week or you're just killing it at your job and there's 15 people at your Bible study at your job. I don't care. Where are you functionally planting a church? Because I keep on having people call me and they're like, I want to move to, you name it, sexy city and find out if I'm a church planter. Why not find out if you're a church planter now? You know? Who's following you? How are you leading them? Are they actually, are you doing anything from Acts 2, 42 through 47? Because that's the main assessment. I can pay $1,500 for you to, I'm not paying it, but someone could pay $1,500 for you to go to this thing and we can go through this intense thing. We can bring your wife. We can make her question whether she's a Christian or not. We can do all that, okay? Or we can find out by you loving your neighbors and find out if you're actually a church planter. Like that's, so for me, that's the iceberg of the assessment. And that's kind of kicking a lot of people out of the pipeline. I got to be honest, because they don't like it. Because that means money's not coming until a year and a half from now. That means they have to keep on doing what they're doing. It has to go slow. They have to make disciples. Disciples doesn't just happen. You can't microwave the church. So all this stuff kind of is kicking. So basically, if you want to lose a bunch of potential church planters, come over with me and join this slow, painstaking, everybody leaves you movement. So anyways, that's assessment. I don't know. Maybe that took too long for you to want to go into coaching and training.
No, tell us about those. Yeah.
Yeah. So coaching for us is just, it's personal, it's relational. Like right now we have 8 guys. Four of them are currently planting. Four of them are wanting to plant. And so we have 2 different cohorts. They're in a monthly cohort, and and I meet with them weekly. Most of them I meet with weekly and just personally coach them. We have marriage coaches for them. Someone who just watches their marriage and sticks alongside of them. And all of this is just relational. And we start out basically just detoxing them from, okay, I want to plant a Sunday morning service. That's great. That's not the church. We want to detox them from the idea that this is a Sunday morning service to how do we build systems of discipleship. And eventually, if you have a great system of and people are building relationships and building disciples, then yeah, we can start a Sunday service down the line. But we take a long time to detox them from that and intox them into, yeah, how do we make disciples? How do you love your neighbor? How do you reach people far from God? And that takes about 1.5 years of coaching and just side by side, love, care, hard phone calls, annoying phone calls, good phone calls, victories, non-victories. And then, we're hopefully getting them into an environment. So we get them into mother churches or what we call greenhouses. Our greenhouses are churches that are intentional financially and relationally raising up leaders and sending them out wherever they're going to go. Those environments are assessed as well. And so that there's kind of this big pipeline and system of work. Honestly, those structures are good and they're grand, but at the same, it really is just a slow, painstaking relational journey of walking with people who are trying to contextualize and make disciples in their context.
Hmm.
That's good stuff. And it seems like it's going to last. It's going to stand the test of time. I love what you said at the beginning about how we're going to be hospice, but the next generations are going to see it kind of be fulfilled. And it seems like this kind of a model is more, it may not have the initial like boom to it or boost to it, but it'll have that long-term growth. I mean, it's just like the cultivating or the greenhouse or the plant analogy. It's just, the strongest redwoods are the ones that have been growing for the longest amount of time. It's not the ones that spring up quickly. So
yeah,
but it's not as exciting in the short term. What are we going to do about that? We want to have the numbers and the planters and all this, excitement.
Right. And we all have bosses that are looking for some of that stuff. I mean, yeah. if you're going to be frank, that's what people want results.
It's like you're not doing anything. Like, what are you guys doing? You've only planted, 10 churches, and like we've put all this money into it, and you're doing all this stuff and you've only got 10 churches. What are you doing?
Yeah. And honestly, and I know we say that tongue in cheek, but that will still be the expectation always. So it's as a leader, it's like, what am I going to give myself to? Because I could certainly put people out in the field that shouldn't be, but mm-hmm. they're engaging, they're attractive, they're magnets, their character may not be there, their marriage may not be there, but they have those things. And we could chalk it up to, I know denominations, I know movements that will come along and go, hey, we got $100,000 for you today.
Yeah.
And if that's the deal, we can send people that way. But
send me the number of one of those?
Yeah. we all know what it is, but just for
yeah, we
the
all
sake
know.
Of,
just yeah. Just
could you
so
maybe
others know.
Tell me
for a friend?
Yeah, I'm asking for a friend. That's good. No, it's so true. So true. And it's like, it's just, you get someone out there that's dynamic and like you're talking about, the character's not great and they could have a big church, they could have a quote unquote successful ministry, but then what's the lasting fruit? Mm. And I just think about Jesus. I'm always thinking about Jesus and his disciples. It's like, he was always cutting down the crowds. He did not care
about the numbers. It was always cutting him down to the 12, and even the three guys that he was with, it was like, he knew what was going to happen. It's just putting our trust in the Lord, I guess. Justin, what's the one thing that you're most excited about in church planting coming up? Because we're getting close to the end of the podcast here. I want to know what you're excited about.
Yeah, I'm excited about this next generation, honestly. I think for years we've put young adults into a corner. This is a thought from my friends Will Henderson, that we put them in, you know, we said let's create young adult ministry, and we put them into a corner and gave them pizza and had them date each other, and you know, and it's good. It created marriages and it created babies, and that's all good and grand. At the same time, I think they have dreams. I think they have vision. So I'm excited to help them move from their angst to dreaming and envisioning what a movement of God could look like. I'm excited just to be a tiny, teensy weensy part of that. And I do think God's going to build his church, and the gates of hell won't prevail against it.
That's great.
Justin, I got a question for you. If you could just give one piece of advice, let's say somebody's listening to this and they are thinking about maybe planting a church. That's why they've started listening to this podcast. What advice would you have for them? What would you say to them?
Yeah, I would go back to one of my first thoughts, which is all you have to do is make disciples in your neighborhood, in your context. I would say be a priest over the people, the place, and the platform that God has given you. Just start there. Eat dinner with people who are far from God. Coach soccer, be in the community. Just reach people. And at some point, when you love them, they're going to want to be in your house. And they're going to want to study the Bible with you. And they're going to want you to pray with them. And if you can lead that small community and see what God does, then there's a good chance he builds a church. And it may not look like anything you thought it was going to be, but there's a solid chance in your faithfulness he's going to build a church. And that's how you'll find out if you're a church planter or not. I beg you and implore you, don't go get $150,000. Don't leave your job. Don't leave people who are far from God at your job to go stand on a platform somewhere. The platform will come. And if you're a good Bible teacher, you'll be good at it. It'll be great. I promise. But it takes the other stuff first. It takes being faithful in the other stuff first. That's how you know if you're going to build a 40, 50, 60-year church, or you're going to build something in a microwave that'll pop, and then it'll be kernels on the ground, 2 minutes later.
Man, this is such a good insight, good admonition from you, Justin. Really appreciate having you on the podcast. Love to have you back, because I do feel like you are a professional, and we have a lot of untapped wisdom that we could get into. But we'll have you back in another episode if that's all right. And but great having you, Nick. Always great having you on the show. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, great being here.
Yeah,
thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening. The Cultivate Church Planting Podcast is part of CGN Media, a podcast network that points to Christ. Check out cgnmedia.org for more great shows and ways to support the ministry.